If you've inscribed something as an ordinal, there's a pretty good chance you've used today's guest service. Today I got none other than Brian Laughlin, Bruffstar on Twitter, on the pod. He is the co-founder of OrdinalsBot, which was the first service to make it easy to inscribe things and has since turned into a big company doing all kinds of drops, building out a robust API, and a bunch of other things, which I'm going to touch on. But first, welcome back, everybody, to the Built on Bitcoin podcast. I am your humble host, Jacob Brown, and you know what we do here. We're talking to the best founders in Bitcoin. This podcast is one part technical, one part tactical, one part vibes. So today, you're going to learn something, or you get your sats back. But as I was saying, Brian has been in the Bitcoin space for a minute. He actually started on ETH and launched a Satoshi-focused ETH NFT collection, which is a pretty interesting origin story. And actually how he slowly moved into Bitcoin is also super interesting. But then we talk about the origins of OrdinalsBot and what made him want to build this. What were some of the early headaches? How did they think about designing good product? And a bunch of other topics. So if you're a builder and you want to learn some kind of nuance and some tactics from someone who has succeeded in building a pretty big company, this is a great one for you. So without further ado, let's jump into this fantastic conversation with Brian Laughlin, aka Bruffstar, the co-founder of OrdinalsBot.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Brian,
so Daniel, man, how are you?
Really good, man. Thanks for having me.
And Danny, man, great to see you as always. I've seen you at the conferences, and always a good time. But I've known you for a while, and I want to kind of go back to some ancient history of Satoshiables and kind of like what is this dope collection you had that was on ETH. And then, like, lead me in a little bit into your journey back into Bitcoin, because I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have known each other for a few years now. It's been a crazy, crazy ride when you think about it, you know. And this is my second time on the pod, which I'm super excited about. So good to be coming back on and continuing my story, I guess, you know. But yeah, it all started back in 2021. I launched a collection called Satoshiables on Ethereum. And it went really well. I launched it right at the perfect time. You know, the NFT bull run was really kicking off at that point. People were really minting all these new collectibles. And, you know, this is pre-Bored Ape Yacht Club and things like that. So it was pretty cool. And I minted them all on one weekend. And then that was my crypto journey. I quit my job the next day and went all in on it, essentially. But during the mint, I was watching all the mints coming in. You know, I was just shocked to see you and people actually minting this thing, like one mint, two mints, three mints. I'm like, it's actually working, you know? Oh my god. And then someone minted 50 of them, 50, like for one ETH. And I'm just like, holy shit, like, what the hell? And then that person slid into my DMs, and it was none other than Trevor Owens, who is, of course, a huge Bitcoin, you know, L2 advocate, entrepreneur, legend. And he's like, hey, dude, these are really cool, but it's Satoshi-based, like, it belongs on Bitcoin. And I'm like, bro, like, Bitcoin doesn't have NFTs, what are you talking about, you know? And he's like, well, actually, you know, have you heard of Stacks before? And that then led me down the Stacks rabbit hole, and, you know, I went all in, like everyone else did in that ecosystem. I created Stacks Bridge, which was what the previous interview on the pod was about, you know, all about Stacks Bridge. Migrated a community from Ethereum to Stacks. It was really cool, you know, we got like 30% bridged over. We introduced a lot of our holders to Stacks and to Bitcoin. So back then it was a real, real exciting time. So I was building that out, building with the Stacks ecosystem at the same time. And then Ordinals comes along, and then it's like, boom, you know, it's kind of changed everything else. So,
yeah, off to the races. Yeah, the cool thing is like, I think there is a theme here, which is like you've been kind of doing stuff that's previously viewed as like kind of impossible or at least very difficult. Because even bridging from ETH to Stacks, like no one was doing that. Yeah. So you were banging your head against the wall trying to solve that problem. And same thing with Ordinals bot, where it's like Ordinals pops off. No one knows what the fuck they're doing, how to use these tools. Yeah. And so like help me understand that thought process of like Ordinals start to pop. What's going through your head as you're watching this, but as you go into building out this like first subscription service?
Yeah, I think, as I say, you know, I was always had a close finger on the pulse in terms of Bitcoin collectibles. When you look at Stacks, Stacks were essentially touting as Bitcoin collectibles. So I was always in that ecosystem. And then by the end of 2020, I think I stumbled upon Casey's podcast, Casey Rodimer, the creator of Ordinals, his podcast. And just like really instantly kind of got it. I don't know what happened. I just really understood. I thought, okay, this is cool. You actually just make sats non-fungible and then you can apply data inside. So I was like, I get the concept. I really dig Ordinals theory, the way he explained it. And I'm like, okay, how do I do it then? How do I inscribe something? Like, what do I do? It turns out, like, I'm a front-end developer, right? So I'm like, this is too much for me. All this GitHub tutorial stuff, I'm like, oh my goodness. So I reached out to a friend of mine who I was worked with actually on the bridge, the Stacks bridge. I said to him, okay, if you had this Ordinals thing? And he was like, yeah. You know, reluctantly said yes. He's like, but I'm already building something. I said, ah, cool, what is it? He's like, well, it's a way to automate the process. I says, dude, this is exactly what I need. Like, let's put a front end on it and we'll launch this thing. So we literally built it over the weekend. I put a front end on what he was working on. We launched it and it just went absolutely haywire because at the time to inscribe an order, this is, you're talking, I found out about it in December, you know, 2022. Casey launched it on mainnet January 2023 and we launched Ordinals bot on February 7th, 2023. So like it was really, really early on. And at that time to inscribe things, people were already getting the gist of it and going, okay, I get this. So people were racing to do these early inscriptions and get in early on this new ecosystem because, you know, you look at the history, right? You look at CryptoPunks and you look at other early type collections or other chains that are now going for a large amount or went for a large amount. That was the rush of people like, I want to get in early and inscribe this stuff early. So at the time, yeah, people were minting collections and there was a thing called Bitcoin Punks, which is essentially like a carbon copy clone of CryptoPunks, but people were inscribing them on chain and the first one to inscribe them essentially got it. But to do that, people were in Discord saying, hey bro, give me $1,000 and I'll inscribe it for you. I've got a node set up. Trust me, bro, and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that was the norm and there's Excel sheets involved and all sorts of dodgy deals involved. And then we come along with a service where it's essentially it's a website. You drag and drop the file, and then we inscribe it and send it to you. And that just kind of leaked in their Discord, and it blew up. We suddenly got, like, thousands of degens on our website, and they melted our server. We were down for 6 hours. We had to scale up again. It was really, really, like, talk about product market fit. This was, like, since the first hour. It was absolutely crazy. And then, yeah, just been growing it since then, growing with the Ordinals ecosystem, and it's been really fun.
Yeah, it's like, it's funny because some of us would call ourselves Ordinals OGs, which kind of feels funny because it's like, it's 2 years
one,
tops.
Not one and a half, yeah, 1-2.
Yeah, cool. It feels almost disrespectful to say you're an OG of anything until you've like gone through a cycle almost. But
sure.
With runes, it was weird because runes were so telegraphed that like on day one, we had hella infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it was like, you didn't need to run a node, but with Ordinals, it was the exact opposite, where it's like people are spinning up nodes to try and figure it out for the first time. You see like the node count skyrocket.
Yep.
And then you guys came out and it was like for 3 weeks, it was like the only way that you would be inscribing things was Ordinals bot because there was just nothing else out there, which was crazy to see.
Yeah, I've got a stat for you. At that time, it was really how it is, 40% of all inscriptions were going through our service.
Oh my god.
Which is absolutely insane. Considering like when there was like 5,000 ordinals before we launched, and then the day after there was like 15,000, which is just crazy.
Yep. Insane. So and that was like you were trying to solve making it easy for someone to just drag an image, add a couple steps where you're going to receive the inscription. So it's like a very basic front end, but it seems like it's evolved over time. So like, starting with that, what is Ordinals Bot now? Like, you guys have an API, I've heard. Like, what are all the ways that you guys are, like, interacting and, like, building infra now?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we, like you said, we started off as just, like, a simple drag-and-drop mechanism. And then I think very early on, someone wanted to use that in their own website for some other project. So we essentially extracted our back-end and put it through our API. So, we launched our API really early. Like, I think it was in the first few weeks we had an API up. And then that kind of moved us already into being an API first company. So we realized quite early, like, oh, actually, if like everything we build, other people can use, we should just build out the API first, then integrate it into our app, meaning with two birds with one stone kind of thing, and everyone can then use our API. So that's exactly the mindset we've had since then. And yeah, we've built out our API to be going with the times, let's say, in terms of like how Ordinals has evolved. Because when you think about it, like when Ordinals launched in January, Casey and Raf themselves have come out publicly and said it wasn't ready. Like the Ordinals client and wallet like wasn't ready in January last year, because like they didn't expect it to blow up. You know, Casey just wanted it online, didn't really think it was going to kick off. So they thought they had time to actually evolve this over like a year, but it actually blew up like almost instantly. So the Ordinals like protocol itself only got to maturity like pretty much by the end of last year, if that, you know, like, because if you remember, we went through a whole lot of different kind of the cursed inscriptions and all sorts of kind of crazy things there. So as a builder company, when you're building against that as well, you need to try and keep up, right? Because obviously when they release a new version, you want to give those features to your end users, and maybe it's a critical bug as well. You need to keep up with that ever-changing kind of core protocol that you're building on top of. So that was a challenge then, but you know, we managed to get through that, and it quickly evolved into people then like, okay, I've done photos of my cat and my great uncle or whatever it is, but like now people are realizing, oh wait a minute, there's actually collections to be had here. So the collections started dropping, and people started saying, how do I launch my 10k PFP collection that I've got sitting here, or how do I migrate from Ethereum and launch something on Bitcoin with a community that I've already got? So we captured a lot of that market, and we had the first ever like inscription on demand service, which was born out of the fact that it's not easy to mint a 10k PFP collection on Bitcoin. Like you can do on other chains where you just actually mint the whole collection and then kind of distribute them. It's very expensive to do that on Bitcoin. So we come up with this mechanism where essentially just give us the files and we'll give you a mint page, and then people can pay to mint and we'll just serve up the files as they inscribe, basically. So it's actually zero upfront cost for the project, and you offload the inscription costs to the end user. So that was very successful at the beginning, because again, it's like low barrier to entry for most people. They can get their toes wet and just see how it goes. You know, quite early on, Magic Eden came into the fold as well, which is random because I got a DM from someone which had like Magic Eden in their name, and I'm like, this is definitely a scam. Someone's trying to scam me here, you know. But it turns out it was actually Magic Eden, and they were interested in our API. They were interested in what we were doing, because from their mind, they're obviously a billion-dollar company. They've obviously done great on Solana and Ethereum. And, you know, they've got two very, very smart co-founders. So they're like, this has got to be a thing on Bitcoin. We want to get involved, but how can we do it in the most, like, minimum amount of the non-disruptive way, like, that for our core business? So they wanted to move really fast with Magic Eden and get their Bitcoin kind of marketplace up and running. So they were looking at builders in the space. We were one of those builders. We already had quite advanced like knowledge of inscriptions and stuff, and yeah, we partnered up with them. So they wanted to essentially launch pre-inscribed collections, so we did all of the inscriptions for those early collections that Magic Eden dropped. So essentially they would just offload the project to me. I would then like work with that project, say, okay, show me your artwork, what are you actually trying to like launch here on Bitcoin? And 9 times out of 10 it would be 4 megabyte images times 10,000. I'm like, dude, that we can't do that. Like, it'll cost you like 1,000 Bitcoin. Like, it's just not possible. So I'd work with them to try and like maybe optimize the size down without like you losing the quality. Maybe we could then reach into like breaking it up, and by that point recursive like come into the play, so I could recursively build collections, and I kind of like really learned a lot about that. So yeah, back in the day, we launched maybe like most of the collections that launched the Magic Eden came through our system in terms of me onboarding them and getting the collection ready to go to be sold on Magic Eden. And then, yeah, since then, again, we've now grew into, we've got our own Marketplace API, we've got our own, obviously, Inscriptions API. We've just launched a project called Token Pay. We're launching our own Marketplace. Like, we're pretty much doing everything at this point, so it's been quite a journey.
Insane. One thing that stands out is that a lot of founders have a hard time figuring out what to build. It's a super difficult question as a founder to know what the market really needs. And it sounds like the main thing, you start with solving your own pain point, which is like inscriptions are hard AF, so let's make it easier for myself first, but then the market can use it. But then it sounds like a lot of it was just this inscription as a service is kind of like a white glove. Customers come to me with needs, and I'm just solving their needs. And then on the back end, I'm going to find out how to automate it. So you start doing like 4 meggers or big collections, and you're doing it for the first time. And then as you do it, you can kind of like systematize it. Like, is that kind of how this happened?
Yes, that's quite accurate for sure. I mean, me and my co-founder is very much on that same wavelength. It's like, let's just try something and, you know, get it out there and do the job, you know, and then how do we automate it is one of our core principles. So we're always looking to do that, and that means then properly building up the product, properly building out APIs and documentation for it, and then put it out into the wild. So that's how a lot of our projects and products are born. Yeah.
Yep. And then how does because you say you're an API first company, and another person that says that is Lunarcrush, which is another one of our portfolio companies. So we got you guys. We have amazing founders at BFF, but. Lunarcrush has the same mentality, which is like, we want to be the best user of our API.
Yep.
And through that, you build the right tooling that you need, and then you serve it to like a beautiful front end, for example. But I'm just curious on that. So like a company is trying to figure out what to build for their kind of like API company. And, you know, like, for example, right now, like recursion is like still kind of hard to use. So like, how do you think about building tools for Ord when there's like gaps in the market, or it is kind of updating in real time? Like, how do you kind of dance with this line of what to build for your company?
Yeah, so I'm co-founder, but I'm also de facto head of product and front end manager. I'm doing a lot of things, but really I'm passionate about the product side of building really cool products. So with that comes a million ideas a day, right? So I'm always thinking of cool things, and I always bring it to the team and like, let's do this. So it is very much a hard thing to like focus and pick the winners there. We just released another one called Ord.me, which has got to be a whole social media thing. Like, it just doesn't stop, essentially. But a lot of it is just like, get it out there, get an MVP out there, and then see how the market reacts to it. And then let's build on, like, just let the market dictate what works and what doesn't work. You know, some examples of that was Rare Sats, for example. You know, we built some tooling around that, and then we got like an update with people saying, I want to inscribe on Rare Sats. It's like, okay, that's an obvious one, let's build that feature. So we built into our inscription flow where people can choose the Rare Sats that they want to inscribe on. So like, a lot of it is market dictated, but that's not to say that I don't go off in tangents sometimes and just like scratch a niche that I want to, like, I've been thinking about for a while, you know.
Yep, that makes sense. One thing you mentioned is like, you had this mint on ETH that went really well, and you come to Ordinals. How different is minting on ETH versus on Ordinals? Because like, one of the things you mentioned earlier was like, you had this great service where the inscription would happen at the time of purchase, so it's pushed to the buyer, and that's great because Ordinals can be expensive as shit, and you can put up 100K and then flops and you're just ass out. So talk to me about the, is there like, what is the things you learned of like the difference between ETH and Ordinals? And I have a follow-up question.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the number one thing in my opinion, it's one of the things where I went all in on Bitcoin and Ordinals, is the fact that that is stored on chain. Like, number one reason why you should be launching things on Bitcoin if you have the choice. You know, I launched Satoshi was on Ethereum, And it always irked me that, you know, I'm pointing somewhere else for the actual file, you know, like whether it be IPFS or Arweave or whatever else it is. So that's always been a kind of pain point for me about Ethereum collections, is that these things are pointers essentially to somewhere else. And, you know, even that, even like Arweave and IPFS, like that's not magically just stored somewhere. Like someone has to host those IPFS, like that IPFS data. So it's not forever, it's not permanent. Someone has to maintain those server costs. And if we just look at the internet, I mean, look at, try and find me a web page from 1992, right, or whatever it was. Like, they're all offline now, they're all dead links, basically. And that's going to happen, unfortunately, with a big majority of the Ethereum NFTs will essentially just be pointing to dead links. And a classic example is these FTX collectibles, right? Literally, the government changed the link to the image. It now says to an image that says your image is now owned by the US government. Like, it's just not, it's just so obvious that having the data on chain is just an absolutely amazing feature of inscriptions and ordinals. And to the point where it's almost like caveman level painting, you know, historical stuff. So I'm so bullish on that, and I'm so all in on that. There's some other things that I'm quite bullish on in terms of differences, which is, you know, smart contracts themselves on Ethereum opened Pandora's box and really took Web3 to another level, of course, right? You can't take that away from it. But it also did open up the you know, scamming and a lot of fraud and a lot of like cowboy programming and people losing quite a large amount of money. On Bitcoin, what I like about Bitcoin is it's very Bitcoin native. The Ordinals like ecosystem is built on top of Bitcoin in a very, very clean way, where it didn't require any changes to Bitcoin. The whole marketplace infrastructure is propped up on pre-existing technology, PSBTs, you know, partially signed Bitcoin transactions, which are core Bitcoin functionality. There's no smart contracts. The Ordinals theory indexer is very, very simple. It's just an index. So yeah, there's a lot of things that are, you know, pros and cons, you know, and but you know, Bitcoin has its limitations as well, of course.
Yep. And like you said, the big one is being on-chain, because that shit, as long as Bitcoin's around, these things will be around. But one thing that comes with that is high fees, which is like right now it's cheap, and it's been expensive in the past. We've seen some crazy fee spikes. So the fact that we know there's possibility that we can go up to like, you know, 1,000 sats per V-byte, for example, As a provider of, you know, tooling for ordinals, how do you guys think about like building tooling to mitigate things that you know are going to happen, like high fees?
Yeah, you know, fees are part and parcel with any blockchain. I remember back in 2021 or 2022, whatever DeFi summer happened, I think it's 2020, you're spending more on Ethereum gas fees to like extract your crypto DeFi earnings than it would to actually what you're earning. So, you know, Ethereum is not perfect either in terms of fees. So, and Bitcoin very much as PVP, and, you know, the fee market there is thriving now because of ordinals, but that's all good and all good when you want to launch a collection and it's like now costing you literally 100x more than it would have a month ago is not the best pill to swallow, right, when you're trying to launch something there. But, you know, my advice is mostly, you know, well, again, is there enough demand for your project, right? Because people would pay for it. Is there ways that we can get your inscription file size down to save a lot of cost? Simply by there's actually like, let's say you had a 100 piece image collection, and you know, those images might be already like 200 to 300 kilobytes. You could literally drop them through like go to tinypng.com literally, and it's a lossless image compressor optimizer, and it, without any visual quality, you've saved 70% file size, and that 70% file size directly correlates to the actual inscription cost, you know, because it's all about bytes at the end of the day. So there's loads of tricks you can do to get around, you know, or optimize your kind of costs for sure. And then another bit of advice would be like, we've seen it go to 1,000 and now it's back down to 3, right? So like, it's up and down. Like, you just need to pick your moment. If you've got time to wait, then you should, and it's more affordable for you to do so, then just wait, man. The mempool will go down again. So that's my advice for people.
Do you, the other one people can do if they build the right collection, depending on the art, is recursion.
Mm.
Do you have any pulse on people valuing solid pieces versus recursion, or is that just made up arbitrary distinction?
Yeah, someone actually asked me that in the past, and it did make me ponder for a second, but I've not seen any evidence of one being more valuable than the other for that particular reason. There's one collection that I did I got in touch with, and they gave me one, and I got involved with them, which is this gold bars collection. And they actually did lean into the fact that, hey, these are heavy, big, meaty inscriptions that we paid a lot for to inscribe. Therefore, if we paid a lot to inscribe them, that intrinsically gives them more value. But it's a flaky kind of argument, because, like, yes, you've paid that a lot, but you paid it to the miner. It's not literally baked into that value. The value's kind of gone at that point. So it's a weird one. Recursion, on the other hand, which I'm a huge advocate of, obviously, I wrote a Medium article on it really, really early, and then I really took it to the next level when I worked on Pizza Ninjas with Trevor. That was recursion to the next level, you know, what we did for those guys. So I think there's also value to be said that recursion opens up a lot more opportunities to build value into your NFT in that kind of way. I mean, when you look at what we've done with Pizza Ninjas, when you open the menu, you can resize it. There's a game emulator. There's the animation editor. Like, try doing that with a JPEG, you know? So it's like this depends on what you're trying to, like, achieve and yeah, what you see is valuable, I guess, you know. But when it comes to maybe, like, artwork that just can't be broken up, maybe photography, like, look what Casey just did with the Fun collection, right? I think it's called Fun, right? That's beautiful photography, right? And they just spent the time actually inscribing them over time when the mempool was low. And at the end, you've now got really high quality images on ordinals as well. So there's just different ways of doing it.
Yep. Okay. Makes sense. Couple more questions. This has been great. How do you guys view all these different meta protocols and the kind of the L2s? Because you have ordinals and you have runes, which are like KC certified.
Yeah,
and then you have 17,000 other meta protocols launching,
yeah,
and all the established L2s and the new L2s coming online. So, like, as a builder watching the space, how do you guys pick what to support?
Yeah, it's a great question. And first of all, my personal opinion is I love it. I think the more stuff building on Bitcoin, the better, in my opinion. We need this diverse culture and ecosystems. And I actually said it last year at the Bitcoin conference. I said there'll be a Cambrian explosion of L2s and meta protocols. And that's now, obviously, it's evident that there's just so many things happening. If you rewind back to like the beginning, essentially, the first one was actually like the Sats naming service. I don't know if you remember that one. So the Sats naming service was laid out, the blueprint, essentially, for what meta protocols could be on top of ordinals. They were the first ones to use the JSON. They were the first one to use the first is first principle, where if I do jake.sats first, it's mine, and that's it, and anyone after it doesn't. So they laid out the blueprint for that, and it was Sats names. So we of course, like, at the time, were like, that was the only one to be like, let's build tooling around about it. So I built an interface where you can click on it, you take your name that you want, we actually built our own search tool where you can search on all inception to see if that was available, and then you could register it. So I built that UI for that Sats naming. Then Domo, the creator of BRC20, took inspiration from Sats and could say, no, actually, we can do kind of something similar to make a fungible protocol, because then I could just say the first person to launch Ordi token is then the owner of that. So he used the first is first principle, he used the JSON, and he built the BRC20 standard, which we completely faded, like, utterly and completely faded, because we're like, ah, that's just the dumbest shit ever, you know? And we completely faded it. And of course, never feed anything that DGens have got to be like. When you warn DGens to say don't mint this, it's absolutely useless. That was the thought. We should have actually doubled down on it, because that's then fuel to their fire. And as you've seen, it just went crazy. Ordi went to $1 billion. Unisat did a really great job in that regard. And then we came along, we did some things with our API and also built our inscription tooling. The reason we were quite successful in that, let's say, not as much as other platforms, but the likes of, like, Leather and Xverse used us quite early on for BRC20 transfers and the like, so that was pretty cool. And then another fun BRC20 story was randomly one day I put the Ordi token, which is the first ever BRC20 token that Doma launched, I put the inscription ID into our database, and an order popped up, and I'm like, no way. So I DM'd Domo, who's now like an advisor of ours as well. I met him a few times. He's like, I said to him, did you launch Ordi with Ordinal's bot? And he says, yeah, it was my first ever inscription. And I says, dude, I'm going to milk the hell out of that. Every podcast I'm on, every time I say, I'm going to see what you just told me there. So yeah, he launched Ordi essentially through Ordinal's bot as an inscription, a text inscription at the time. And that went on to be a $1 billion token. And we inscribed zero of it. Like, it's like it launched through our own platform, and we're not sitting here massive backholders. That's how much we slept on BRT20. So what was great about it was, it was just like a massive door opener for degens to come in and get it, because degens are different slightly from like retail collectors, because degens will go through the pain to be early at something. And they don't care if it's through hoops and I need to learn this new thing, and it's, they go through that pain to get that, and that equated to billions of dollars of volume basically, and also like the inscription count going from literally 100,000 to 1 million over like the course of a week, and then hitting tens of millions because of BRC20. Yeah, and then Casey came along and said, well, I don't think we should do it like this. If we're going to do a token standard, this is how we do it. And of course, then Runes was born, and then they had this two competing. You've got these two competing fungible kind of standards, and then yeah, L2s are another really fascinating thing for me. I think there's some great L2s popping up. Obviously, we cut our mustard, whatever that saying is, in stacks, right? So that's got to be, in my opinion, very very exciting to see when Nakamoto gets released and people start to see that quick block time, and then just. It's got the history there as well, so I think stacks is for me going to be very exciting within the next year. But you've got others creeping up, like Bob are doing really great things as well. I really like Bob, built on Bitcoin, which is hilariously the name of this podcast, I think. Is it not?
Yeah.
You should sue them.
We gotta talk, Alexei.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's many other L2s happening, but yeah, for me, it's like. The Bitcoin is a fee market, and that's how you get it, by building all these cool L2s and meta protocols.
Yeah. Is there any on the short list, not to drop any alpha, but like that you guys are watching more closely than others? Because you support Runes already, right?
Yeah, we had to double down on Runes, of course. So like we actually have our Runes launchpad live as well. So like we did collection launchpad, then we did BRC20 launchpad, where people could essentially distribute their BRC20. And then we've now got our Runes launchpad, which is the same functionality. Again, the question is, you know, why? And well, the reason is because people might want to distribute the tokens in their own way, right? Whereas a Fair Mint, Fair Mints are, by the way, the most amazing thing that ever happened. I think it's the most really, really cool thing that Dom wanted to just do was the Fair Mint mechanism. However, when you've got maybe a utility token or a business or whatever, and you have tokenomics and you're giving away a certain portion as a sale, then you need tooling such as launchpads, and that's what we offered. And then yeah, we did also our token pay product now is started with Runes, where essentially now it's again an API. You can use token pay API to integrate it into your website to receive to take payments in Runes. So we have integrated it in our service to allow people to mint with Runes, like actually any rune you can now mint with it. The project wants you, if the project says I'm going to drop an Ordinal's collection, I want people to pay in dog token, we can do that now, basically. But you could also then take our API and go create integrate it into your Shopify website, where you want people to buy T-shirts with Runes, for example. Our token pay API can do that. So Runes, we definitely doubled down on. Tap and Track, we were big fans of those guys, and we did some tooling for that, so you can actually launch Tap tokens through our platform as well. Atomico, I'm really quite big fan of that as well. We had big, huge plans to explore Atomicals, but then Runes kind of railroaded those plans, unfortunately. Yeah, there's quite a lot out there, to be honest. So at the beginning, we were really stressed about, like, we need to do everything, you know, we need to really jump on everything. And then it's like, actually, you know what, let's just pick our lane and do it really, really well, kind of thing. So
there you go. Yeah, just execute over time. The token pay is huge.
Yeah.
Because I've been super bullish on Runes as, like, I think it's going to be, the way I've described it, is it's going to be like the fungible token, almost like interoperability layer. Because if you look at all the ecosystems, everyone has a bridge on the roadmap from runes to their L2.
Yeah.
So effectively, you can go from, you know, rootstock into a runes bridge, and then from the back into runes, you can go over to stacks, for example. And now these two are talking through like two layers of abstraction. But the funny thing is, like, people can't not think about meme coins. So they're like, oh yeah, let me pay in dog. That's stupid. And it's like, for now, but like, we're going to get utility. We're going to get stable coins. All these are going to happen. Yeah. And now you can use a runes to pay for whatever you want.
There was once upon a time you could buy a Tesla with Doge, right? So, you know, it's not so crazy to say that a Bitcoin meme coin could eventually make it mainstream. You know, all we need is Elon Musk to come in and buy up some dog token, and then we're off to the races, basically.
Yep. All right, last question. What are you most excited about right now? And it could be a Bitcoin, it could be stuff you're working on, one of your 10,000 ideas, or just like something general. What's got you super hyped right now?
Oh, there's so many things, actually. Like, honestly, it's been a year and a half now building in this space, and every single, like, week almost is almost something cool happening. Me and my co-founder Toby are like leading a lot of the business development as well. We got off call sometimes. We're just like, dude, what is this life, man? Like, we're like, as you guys know, we launched the 4Mega in collaboration with the Pepe guys with French Montana. We did Ghostface Killer. We did all these crazy things. It's like, what is this life, you know? And so it's been really exciting in that regard, and seeing all these cool IPs and early adopters of like have big names coming into Bitcoin. I think that's, for me, really exciting, because we're now working also with the Elvis estate. We're going to do like an officially stamped Elvis drop as well. So I'm passionate about IP, and you know, there's a lot of real big players in the space. Like Trevor Owens is also really passionate about IP, and he gets it. What he's building with Pizza Ninjas, he gets it as well. So I think that IP, big IP for in terms of digital collectibles, really belongs on Bitcoin, just for the fact that it's Bitcoin, but also the longevity and the fact that it's on chain. There's just no reason why you'd want to store high value IP assets anywhere else apart from Bitcoin. So we're already seeing that happening. We've got Elvis, we've got big rap stars and all these other things that are coming. And now what we can do as builders is do it properly. I'm so upset when I look at like Ethereum back in the day, and Porsche, for example, launched a collection on Ethereum. And it was just so lazy. It was just the same car with no utility, and just like, dude, come on, a little bit more creativity, a little bit more thought. Give someone something proud to own in their wallet as a collectible. Like, that's what collectibles are, is you've collected this thing and you're proud to like own it and represent that brand. So I think a lot of the builders in the space, especially us, are trying to emulate that, but on Bitcoin, and give it a real good go at saying, this is what digital collectibles should look like in a really, really big way, right? And bring that Hasbro kind of Pokemon mentality digitally and launch it on Bitcoin. So stay tuned for like what we're about to drop, because we've got so many things in the pipeline in terms of like IP that we've made great connections with. And that ties it into what we're going to launch is the Trio marketplace is going to launch pretty much before the end of the year. And Trio is our token for anyone listening. And basically the marketplace is going to be it's going to be the Trio marketplace. And we're going to utilize all these connections we've got, all these drops that we're doing, and offer a really, really, really nice marketplace experience. All these 4Megas that we've done, there's got to be a big category there. And yeah, it's all got to tie back to the token. There'll be rewards and points and just a whole lot of fun, basically. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
There we go. Alpha alert, Trio marketplace coming. And yeah, IP is the move. Cool, man. This has been fantastic. Always good to reconnect with you. Love what you guys have been cooking. Yeah, thanks for coming on the pod, man.
Thanks, man. We should do it every year. We should do it, and then we'll see Bitcoin go to the moon, basically. That's what we're going
to do. Dude, let's fucking do it. The podcast will keep growing to the stratosphere, and you'll be on the stock market, publicly traded. Like,
that's cool.
We'll slowly get there.
Definitely. Cheers, man.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on, YouTube,
does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right, peace. It's gone up. We playing the long game to the black rock chains with the racks paid off from the blockchain. Going up high octane, so we up in here like pomade. Making big noise, big money, go play with your kid toys. You funny, I'm counting my Bitcoin. We up and we been gone. It's gone up. Planned it out and we did this purposefully. Panning out like the kitchen currently. It's like surgery. Way it's earning me. A nurse's salary for cryptocurrency. I'm on a vacay drinking coconuts while wearing polka dots. This ain't no hocus pocus. Listen up and learn. It's gone up.